The Lord be with you.
Anxiety robs us, so Jesus robs us of our anxiety. And to explain what I mean by that, I'm going to show you a video, and when I show you the video, I want you to try to count how many times a basketball is passed between people wearing white shirts. Make sense? All right, we got a video here.
The monkey business illusion.
It's going to give you the...
Count how many times the players wearing white pass the ball.
Pass the ball, okay. All right.
The monkey business.
How many people counted 16 ball passes? Yeah, hey, pretty good. How many people noticed the gorilla walk through the middle of the game? Yeah. So some of you didn't. Here's the thing. This is a famous experiment in psychology, and when it's done with people who don't know about it, routinely half the people don't see that a gorilla walks through the middle of the experiment. Let's see it again. Wait, just that clip in the next video will show. See, there's a gorilla, right? He's just banging his chest, walking through, and yet consistently people don't see it happen. Psychologists have a term for this. It's called inattentional blindness. When we're focused so much on what we expect that we literally don't see something that's obvious but unexpected. And the reason is because our brains only have so much capacity to process the information they receive, and so they have to pick literally what they are going to see. 2 weeks ago, I talked about how Jesus doesn't tell his disciples when he's coming back because he doesn't want them so focused on the future that they fail to see the present. And today Jesus doubles down on that idea that he's not telling us when he's coming back. He says that no one knows the day, not the angels, not even the Son, but only the Father. And the reason is because, but the danger of this is we stop expecting to see Jesus, right? It's been 2,000 years and he hasn't shown up yet. And so we've got all sorts of other things we focus on instead of looking for Jesus. Jesus talks about how his coming will be like when people were living their lives before Noah's flood and they were eating and drinking and getting married. He says, before he comes, people will be going about working their jobs in the fields or preparing meals at home. There are lots of things for us to focus on. And those are just things we focus on when times are good. At the beginning of Isaiah, times were not good. The city of Jerusalem was constantly at war. There was this empire called the Assyrian Empire, and it was trying to take over the whole Near East. And so some smaller countries wanted to form a coalition to fight the Assyrians. And they wanted Jerusalem to join, and so they attacked Jerusalem in hopes to force its king to be part of this anti-Syrian coalition. It didn't work. Assyria conquers those smaller countries, and then it just steamrolls right along to the doorstep of Jerusalem. And so the people of Jerusalem are living in fear. Every time they see a bunch of foreigners coming their way, they reach for swords and spears to defend themselves. And that's what fear is supposed to do. It's supposed to give us the strength to defend ourselves. Our bodies react when we see something that we're afraid of. Adrenaline hits our system, and so our blood starts pumping faster, and we breathe faster so that our muscles have more oxygen. Our pupils dilate so that we can really take in all the information that we're seeing. And that's really helpful if there's someone right in front of you that you need to fight off with a sword or a spear. But it's less helpful for the things that most of us are afraid of these days. Things like losing our job or climate change or calling someone by the wrong name at coffee hour, right? Our body's response for fight or flight doesn't solve any of those problems. And in fact, if our fears linger and we continue to feed them, they can grow into this general anxiety. Fear is a response to an immediate, tangible threat, but anxiety is this generalized worry about something that might happen in the future. And whereas fear is very helpful for us to stay alive, anxiety can become incredibly harmful, because anxiety robs us. It robs us of energy for anything else. It robs our health, and it robs our focus. And this is true on a national scale. Those people in Jerusalem are anxious about all these other countries that surround them. And one of the big reasons the USSR collapsed during the Cold War is that their economy couldn't keep up with both feeding the people who lived inside their borders and feeding the war machine that they needed to keep up with the arms race. But this can also happen on an individual level. I don't know if you've ever gone to a party and someone says something weird or kind of looks at you funny, and then you leave the party, and for the rest of the night you keep thinking to yourself, wait, what did they mean by that? Were they talking about me? Was there something implied there? And then you can't sleep for the rest of the night. Yeah? This past week, my brother-in-law, he sent me a text. He said, hey, we should go for a walk before the family dinner. And I was like, oh, that sounds great. But then my brain started churning, and I was like, wait a minute. Why does he want to go on a walk with just me? Why does he want to go on a walk before the family dinner? Is, like, something wrong? Is he mad at me, and he wants to confront me while we're alone? Is he dying, and he needs me prepared to comfort his sister when he breaks the news? Are we staging an intervention for Uncle Brad's surfing addiction? Like, what is wrong? And of course, now I can't sleep. I'm up until 2 a.m. wondering what this is about, thinking of all the problems that could be. And so the next day, I'm grumpy with my wife. I'm distracted with my kid. I am robbed of life because I am feeding my fears instead of feeding life. Our brains were not built to help us thrive. Our brains were built to keep us alive, and they do that by looking out for anything that we should be afraid of in this world. And what that means is we can develop a spiritual inattentive blindness, where we are so focused on looking for all the things that we should be afraid of, we don't see Jesus when he shows up right in front of us. And because of that, our worries, our anxieties can rob us of the greatest gifts that God gives us in this life. Because our anxiety robs us, Jesus wants to rob our anxiety. And so we hear him say that we are supposed to keep awake because we don't know the hour that our Lord is coming. In fact, he describes himself as a thief in the night coming, so that we can't just say, well, I know Jesus is coming this time, so I'm going to pay attention in that moment, and the rest of the time, I'm going to let my anxieties run wild. No. Jesus is coming to rob our anxiety. And the way he does that is by telling us he could pop up at any moment, and that's what we've got to focus on. You see, Jesus wants to flip that spiritual inattentive blindness, so that we are so focused looking for Jesus, we don't see things that we've made up to be afraid of. Now, when I say Jesus wants us to be looking for him, I want to be clear, right? We say in Advent, Jesus comes in history, in mystery, and in majesty. And I don't mean Jesus wants us looking for him in history, right? It's not, oh, we got to look back in time to Bethlehem 2,000 years ago. And it's also not even looking for Jesus in majesty, when he comes again in glory in the clouds with trumpets and gathers all people to him. And I say he doesn't want us looking for him in that way, because in Acts chapter 1, when Jesus ascends into heaven, the disciples stand looking at heaven, waiting for him to come back down. And the angels say, don't do that. Here, we got the verse. While Jesus was going, and they were gazing up toward heaven, suddenly two men in white robes stood by them. They said, men of Galilee, why do you stand looking up toward heaven? This Jesus who has been taken up from you into heaven will come in the same way as you saw him go into heaven. When Jesus comes back, you're not going to miss him, right? It says every eye will see him, and all the nations that aren't excited about Jesus coming back will wail because they're not missing him coming back. And in fact, in Matthew 24 and all the way through Matthew 25, we hear parable after parable in which Jesus describes the way that we are supposed to treat each other while we wait for his return. And at the very end, Jesus gives this big reveal that when he comes back in majesty, he will say to us, "Did you see me in mystery? Did you see I was present in your neighbor the whole time?" And so the question becomes, how do we look for Jesus in our everyday life? What does that even look like? Well, for the next 4 weeks, we will be reading passages from the book of Isaiah. And even though the prophet Isaiah wrote 700 years before Jesus, Isaiah tells us what it will look like when God's Messiah comes into our life. And in Isaiah chapter 2, the prophet Isaiah speaks to the people of Jerusalem and says to them that foreign nations will stream to them, that foreign peoples will come to them. And you can just imagine these people in Jerusalem who've been constantly at war with the foreign neighboring countries, hearing that foreigners are coming, quick, grab your swords, grab your spears, we got to defend ourselves. But then Isaiah says, but they're not coming to destroy. They're coming to learn. Isaiah says to the people of Jerusalem, those foreigners that you were afraid of as enemies, they will come to you to become your family. They will come to you because they want to learn the ways of the Lord. And when they learn the ways of the Lord that make them part of God's family, what they will discover is that it is God who judges between nations, who arbitrates between many peoples. And what that means is those nations no longer have to learn war anymore because God teaches them how to be in relationship with each other. And that sets them free to turn their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. They can turn their weapons of war into tools for agriculture. They can stop putting energy into protection and put that energy into production. They can stop feeding their fears and start feeding life. Can you imagine? Can you imagine what our country could do if all the resources that we put into our military, into the CIA, into ICE, instead we put those resources into roads and bridges, into schools and healthcare, into farming and food distribution? Can you imagine what you could do with your life if the energy you put into feeding your fears, you put into feeding life? Friends, it can happen. It does happen every single day. Jesus shows up in people's lives and he robs them of their anxiety. He teaches them that the people they feared as enemies are in fact family. When I showed up for our family's Thanksgiving dinner, I went and checked out my brother-in-law and he gave me this big old hug. And he shared with me how he'd been reminiscing recently about a hike we took 2 years ago, how much he enjoyed it and how he'd really been wanting to spend more time with me out in nature, which he knows he loves. When I got that text message, I started thinking about all the things I could be afraid of, but it turned out he just wanted to be family more deeply. And when I realized that, there was this release inside of me. All that energy I had put into protecting myself could be put into more productively being family. Jesus robbed me of my anxieties, and so I could take my spiritual sword and turn it into a plowshare, my spiritual spear, and turn it into a pruning hook. Friends, we call this a God sighting, a moment when we see Jesus showing up in our lives right here and now. And for the rest of Advent leading to Christmas, we have on this wall a place for you to put your God sightings. In fact, we'll even have a box of notebooks to hand out so that you can put a notebook in your pocket. And as you go through life, when you experience a moment where Jesus has shown up for you, you can write it down so you don't forget. And we really want to encourage you to focus on the physical senses through which you encounter God in your life. Not just your sight and hearing, but your taste and your touch and your smell. Therapists consistently say one of the best ways to manage anxiety is to ground your body in the physical reality, right? Because your anxiety lives in your brain, but if you can get your body to touch something and say, well, this is real, if you can have your body taste something or smell something, you can get to something deeper within you that says, oh, this is what's actually going on. What if those tangible things that you turn to for comfort were the moments you encountered God? Friends, our brains can only focus on so many things. May we choose to keep our eyes on Christ. May we choose to keep awake to Jesus in spirit so that we can sleep soundly in body, not feeding our fears, but fed by God's peace. Amen.